Stay tuned for Upfront Soul. It's time to put a glide in your stride and hitch a ride to the soulful side with Upfront Soul. I'm your host, Sanguine Fromage, laying down 120 minutes of soulful sounds to which you may get down. I have arrived with a surprise to tantalize your listening ears. We'll be joined by a special guest. You might ask, who will we hear? Well, she's a singer, a songwriter, a multi-instrumentalist, and her rich contralto voice will make your liver quiver. It's none other than Joan Armatrading, she who brings us our theme song each and every week, Back to the Night. Well, she's back on the road, touring right now, and we'll have a chance to talk with her in just a little bit. Let's warm you up with a great Joan Armatrading tune about touring. It's Join the Boys, here on Upfront Soul.
come for a helping hand. We're doing our best to keep it steady, but it's falling down around us. Blows keep coming fast and strong. I done found another fellow, he agrees with my direction. Arms around each other's shoulder, we go everywhere. Are you in? Are you out? Are you in? Are you out? Are you in? Are you out? Do you care to dance about and shout? John Jack and the boys being a band doing a one-night stand. We'll be dancing in the floodlight. Second to none, not even on a bad night. Not even on a bad night. We'll succeed where others failed and stay together many years and watch us take the world by storm. Are you in? Are you out? Do you care to dance about and shout? John Jack and the boys being a band doing a one night. Trying to get somewhere, looking around for an extra man. We're doing our best to keep it steady. Stop it falling down around us. Blows keep coming fast and strong. I done found another fellow. We agree with my direction. Arms around each other's shoulders, we go everywhere. Are you in? Are you out? Do you care to dance about and shout? Not even on a bad night. We've been dancing in the floodlight. Second to none, not even on a bad night. We've been dancing in the floodlight. Second to none, not even on a bad night.
So we're here with Joan Armatrading today. Ms. Armatrading, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us in the midst of a very busy tour schedule.
That's my pleasure.
You've just started the U.S. leg of what you've announced will be your last major world tour. How does it feel to be back in the States?
Oh, it's great. I love doing concerts in America. It's when I'm asked where do I like to play the most, whichever country I'm in, I will always say America because it is my favorite place to play. So I'm always very happy to be here.
That's great.
And one thing you just mentioned, this is my last major world tour. People need to understand this is not a retirement. It doesn't mean to say I'll never do another live concert. It means to say that the concerts won't be as extensive as all my concerts have been to date. So instead of a year on the road, it would be a month on the road.
Right, because when some people say world tour, they mean, you know, they'll play the UK and a few dates, you know, elsewhere in, you know, Scandinavia or something. You're on the road for 18 months and you're going back and forth from continent to continent. And that's quite a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. Yes, it's a lot.
Well, I do know that there is a lot of excitement about this tour, and I heard that one of your dates in California sold out within an hour and a half, I think. So,
I heard that.
Know, for you in the audience there, if you're thinking about getting tickets for this tour, you probably should not delay an awful lot. But this is also your first major world tour without a band, as I understand.
Yes. The very first time I toured in America, even though I had a band, I was working with a band in the UK, and when I did gigs in different countries, I decided to tour America on my own. So that would be 1973. So I did that, but I've never done a world tour on my own. And I thought, well, since this is going to be the last time I'm going to do a major world tour, it was kind of the perfect time to do a solo tour as well. Otherwise, I'd have to come back and say, actually, what I meant to say was, this is the penultimate.
How does it feel so far being solo?
Oh, it's great. It's great.
So I had the honor of seeing you recently at your first concert here in the States, and you really just sound wonderful. And you're also very funny, which I saw you years ago with a band, and I don't remember that kind of banter with the audience. It's possible, I mean, it was 30 years ago, and I may have just forgotten some of the details, but...
It wouldn't have been as much, but I have always... Even when I was at my shyest on stage, I did try and inject a little bit of humor because I love comedy. So, and people who have come to the shows often know that over the years, I like to mess about a bit on stage. But yes, the very early days, it would have been less. I'd have said much less on stage, kind of getting over the shyness of talking to people.
Sure.
It would probably be the most I'd be doing. But as I say, over the years, I'm able to relax and just kind of be myself.
Right.
And it's nice. It's nice to have humor. I love comedy, as I said.
You know, do you like to watch comedy or listen to comedy, or you just...
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I'm watching the television, I gravitate to comedy. That's the thing that I'm going to have on most of the time. I'm going to be watching on YouTube or watching on the television or trying to go and see or friends with.
any favorites right now? Or
I like everybody, really. Yeah. It just have to be funny. I was watching a thing with Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Ricky Gervais. So I was watching a program with of them, and they were just all sitting around talking, and that was just... absolutely wonderful to watch these comedians talking amongst themselves, and every now and again interjecting humor that's not scripted.
Right. That's great.
You know, because as a performer, you do have to have things that's scripted.
Sure.
These guys just being completely natural. Really.
That's great. I thought, you know, just in terms of the audience connection on this tour, one of the things I think is really lovely that you're doing is you're incorporating a sort of a retrospective into the show, sort of midway through. And it was just a wonderful and warm part of the show. It was felt like we were looking at a scrapbook with you.
Yeah.
What was it like putting that, presentation together?
It's something that I wanted to do, obviously, and quite hard. Exactly the same as choosing the songs to put in the show. It's quite hard to decide what to do, but of course I have to make that ultimate decision and come up with what I think is going to work well in the show musically and in terms of the photographs. But I don't kind of talk about that bit too much because I want the audience to come and see it.
Of course.
You know, I don't want them to know every detail about it so that when they come, they think, oh, yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't want to spoil the surprise. So I will ask you something that I've wondered about, that you, in 2001, you earned a history degree with honors from the Open University. What was it like to go back to school as an adult in the midst of a career? I think I remember hearing that you were maybe touring at the time.
Yes, I was touring, so that was done whilst I was on tour, and very hard, because email was around, but they wouldn't let you email your work, so I had to finish my essays a long time before the other guys, because I had to get it sent from whichever country I was in back to the UK or post it from wherever it was back to the UK. So it kind of put a little bit more extra pressure on me. Huh. And of course the traveling, I'm traveling from city to city. Then I've got the sound check to do. I've got interviews to do. I've got the gig to do. Then at the end of the gig is the time that mostly I would do the do my work, because that was the quietest uninterrupted time. So that was quite late. So it's quite a strain. It's not something I would do again. I did enjoy it very much so. But it's quite a lot of pressure. And even though I thought at the time it'd be great to you know, do another degree, I just, because I'm touring so much. Yeah. It just wasn't going to happen.
No. I'm curious. I'm a history buff too. What era or topics in history do you find most interesting?
I did history between the wars, so between the First and Second World War, and kind of touched on the war that affected different parts of the world. Mm. But history in general is really interesting. When I did my degree, I did what was called a foundation course, and you chose five subjects, and you had to do something in all of those subjects and then kind of major in whatever you wanted to from that. Right. I chose history, even though I knew I was going to do history. And it was quite interesting finding history in all those different stuff. Like, one was music. It's quite interesting finding out the history of some of the musicians and what they went through and how music kind of evolved and things like that. It was really interesting. And, you know, people will say, oh, I'm not interested in history, but of course everybody is.
Yeah, sure.
They'll go and they ask their grandfather, you know, what did you do when you were young? That's history. Sure. And history is very important, because without that, we wouldn't be where we are today. It informs everything, you know. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I think people don't always understand that that it's relevant to their lives. They think it's memorizing dates.
That's right.
And some of the history that people get taught in school is not always, you know, it's not always the whole story the most interesting story. My main interest in history is the role music has played in social justice movements, like the American Civil Rights Movement and the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa.
Right.
And I know that during the celebration of South Africa's 20th anniversary of democracy, you had a part in that. You were the only non-South African musician invited to play at a concert honoring that?
That's right. It was a series of concerts, and I was very honored to be asked as the only non-South African to be a part of that. And it was a very emotional series of concerts, very, very emotional. But it was great. It was chronicling the history of the movement and showing some of these incredibly moving pictures of what the black guys had to go through and the beatings they had to go through and the struggles to put an end to this kind of horrible segregation that took place. And to, obviously, Mr. Mandela was a huge, huge part of that, amongst others, and he would be one of the first to say there were many others that helped to bring about this peaceful change. You would see all these things that happened and how he came out of prison and how he kind of persuaded the people that this needed to be this peaceful transition. And when you see it all kind of bunched up like that, it really brings it home, because sometimes you get it kind of piecemeal.
Right.
But when you see it kind of condensed like that, it, as I said, really brings it home.
Yeah, and just the length of time, when you consider how much of his life he was in prison and some of the others as well, it's just really sobering.
Yeah.
Sobering. Yeah. So I have a question, just a question or two about your writing. You've said that most of your songs aren't autobiographical per se. Where do you get your inspiration for your characters and the situations in your songs? Do you people watch, or is this stuff that comes from within in a creative way, or what?
It's a bit of everything, but mostly from observation. I am a people watcher, and I've always been an observer. I've always been kind of, even at school, you know, I was always the one watching to see what everybody else was doing. I joined in stuff, but I was always very observant about how people were with each other and how they related to each other and whether they were nice friends or not nice friends to each other. And that's just remained with me all my growing up. So I tell this story all the time because it's quite a good story in that when I was in Australia, one day I was in the restaurant and I saw a couple eating. They weren't eating, they were arguing. They were having, and this argument was getting more and more heated. And finally, the guy got up, like really angrily got up and stormed out, and the woman was in a state. And this was in the restaurant, so all of us are watching, all the restaurants watching. And I felt really quite sad for her. And I thought, I wonder what got them to that shouting stage. Mm. And that's how I wrote the song, The Shouting Stage. Huh. Just kind of watching that thing unfold.
That's really wonderful. You know, I've noticed many of your songs are written with, you know, more or less gender-neutral language, which I think is wonderful because it lets every listener identify with the characters in the song and feel themselves in the song. Is that something that you do consciously when you're writing, or is it just sort of a natural thing?
It's a natural thing, but at the same time, I'm kind of aware of it because when a song like The Weakness in Me, I get as many men as women say, I was in that situation.
Yeah.
That really kind of says, you know, everything about where I was and how I felt and how I got through it. Mm-hmm. And it would, for me, it would be such a shame if only women said this song, or not just that song, but any of the songs. It would be such a shame if only women said, this song means something to me, or if only men said, this song means something to me, because I would feel as if I hadn't done very well, because these emotions, male or female, we're all going through them. When people fall in love, they're falling in love with each other. You know, a man is falling in love with a woman, a woman is falling in love with a man, or if you're gay, the man and the man and the woman and the woman. But it's two people. It's not just this one thing, and you're all feeling things. Maybe not in exactly the same way, but there are similarities. I wrote a song called Lovers Speak. And Lovers Speak is about what is it that lovers say to each other that seems to be so mysterious. But really, it's not mysterious. It's just that they're in love. And they're saying, you know, where should we eat tonight? But because of them being so in love, it seems as if they're saying something that no other person has ever uttered.
Right.
So it's like a language. But it's just about observing. So men and women are doing that. They're having this lover speak, or they're having the weakness that's kind of making them fancy somebody else when they're with somebody. Everybody's having these same kind of feelings. So as I say, it would be such a shame if only one only a man or a woman thought that my songs were good. I'd be quite disappointed.
Yeah, it's a human experience. It's not it's not a male or a female experience.
Yeah.
I'm curious what music was important to you as a young person, if there was anything that really sort of, I'm not thinking so much about what influenced you musically, but what spoke to you when you were in your formative years.
Comedy.
Hmm.
That was my growing up when everybody was. Although at the time I wasn't thinking like this, but when I look back, that's how it was. When everybody else was into bands and going to concerts and following groups, I wasn't doing that. I didn't get into that. But I did listen to the radio a lot and listen to shows that you wouldn't know here, but they were all comedy shows, The Skid Row Kid, Beyond Ken, Round the Horn, The Goon Show, The Navy Lark, you know, all these, they're all comedy shows.
Yeah.
And that's what I would really absolutely love. So I was more interested in that kind of a thing than, following bands.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I've heard you love classical music. Do you have any favorite periods or composers?
I like it all, but Bach, you can't. There's nobody to beat.
Oh, Bach, really. I'm with you.
I mean, I think you just have to kind of own up to that one.
He's the man.
So many still, though. I love the Rachmaninoff pieces. I love Vivaldi. Just the kind of the usual suspects, really. But Bach is the guy.
Amen. Do you think your love of classical music influences your songwriting, or is it just a more of a part of just your personal appreciation?
I think everything and kind of everybody influences what I do, but for me, that's why sometimes I don't like to answer the question of who has influenced you, because I see the distinction of influence and imitation. And quite often when people talk about influence, they're talking about imitation.
Sure.
Who did you imitate as you were growing up? Who did you sit and learn to play all the licks that they did and learn to sing that song that they did? Well, I didn't do that. I just wrote my own stuff. So I wasn't pouring over people's music to work out how they did it. I just kind of started writing my music. But as I say, everything influences. You hear music all the time, no matter, you know, in a lift or doesn't matter where you are, you're going to hear music, and it's bound to have some kind of color to what you're doing. So classical music definitely plays a part in how I think and how I think in terms of arrangements and things like that. But there's nobody that I want to imitate, because I quite like being me.
Yes, please don't. Don't go changing. Do you compose at the piano or with the guitar, or does it really depend?
Both. Both. The Weakness in Me, that's a piano song. You can kind of sometimes, I think, tell which is the piano song, which is the guitar. The piano tends to be more melodic, and the guitar tends to be more rhythmic, more kind of rocky. But, whichever, sometimes the piano, sometimes the guitar, sometimes words first, sometimes music first, sometimes both together. I don't think I've had a piano song that I've moved from the piano to the guitar. They tend to stay where they are once I've started them.
Right. Have you ever thought about doing any other kinds of writing? I'm just curious, have you ever thought about, you know, is there a novel in you or a or a history in you?
There probably is a novel in me. They said there's a novel in all of us, don't they? Now and again I think about things like that, but now and again I think about writing in poetry, and but even that, every time I, like, there's a song of mine called In These Times.
Sure.
And In These Times started out as a poem, but because I'm a songwriter, it ended up being a song. So that's kind of what happens to me. You never know what can happen. At the moment, I'm just writing songs, but you never know.
That's great. Well, I just, before I let you go, and, you know, thank you for taking so much time, I just wanted to say, when I saw you for the first time, I was 12 years old.
All right.
And I was in a very painful and difficult time in my life, and listening to your records gave me so much comfort and strength. And then I got to see you live. And being in the audience as a kid, looking up at you on the stage with your electric guitar, you have such a presence when you're performing. And I looked up at you and I thought, this woman is in charge. And worlds really just opened up for me watching you being who you were on stage with the music that, you know, your music is really, I think, so full of a real spirit of liberation and power that I know I've heard from many people that they've felt that from your music. And so on behalf of all of us out there who have gotten strength from your music, I just want to say thank you.
Oh, that's really nice. Thank you very much. And that really means a lot to me, because when I write the songs, I'm hoping that people want to be connected to them and that people will get something out of the music and be kind of emotionally attached to them. That's when I listen to certain things, and I get that from certain songs. I know when Amy Winehouse was with us, and I was very, very sad that she died, because I was looking forward to seeing her development.
Yeah, me too.
But when I hear her singing and some of the words that she's written, that's kind of powerful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's really, you have achieved that. I hear that from so many people and from listeners and from friends who really have a transforming kind of emotional relationship with your music. And I think it's because it's so well observed and it's so deeply emotional and deeply human and positive. I mean, that's the wonderful thing, I think, that it's, though your song, certainly there's plenty of vulnerability, but the overall feeling is of real uplift, which...
Yes. Thank you, because that's definitely me. I'm definitely the glass half full and getting fuller.
Well, I just want to say to all those who are in the audience right now, if you are going to see Joan Armatrading on this tour, whether it's the fifth time you've seen her or the very first time, you are in for a treat. And Joan Armatrading, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure, Susan.
Yes, my friends, that was none other than Joan Armatrading joining us here on Upfront Soul. If you'd like to learn more about her tour, you can visit her website, joanarmatrading.com, JOANARMATRADING. We're going to hear a little humor from jazz saxophonist Eddie Harris, but first, Yusef Lateef with Russell and Elliot. If you want soul, get it up front. Here on Upfront Soul. Thank you.
Atlantic Records. So if you don't have any of my records, go over to your friend's house and take them. People walk up to me talking about,
I bought your album, I'm making you rich.
I said, do you see my name? My name is Atlantic.
Jonas Gwangwa and George Fenton are credited with that recording. It's called The Funeral, taken from Cry Freedom, the 1987 film about Steve Biko. The song we heard was Nkosi Sikelel' Africa, which was the anthem of the African National Congress. It was originally written in 1897 as a hymn by a Xhosa clergyman. I wish I knew which choir was singing on that recording. If anybody out there knows, please drop me a line at upfrontsoul@gmail.com. Upfrontsoul@gmail.com. Of course, we'd love to hear from you anytime with requests, dedications, questions, or suggestions. Also in that set, we heard from Little Jackie, one of my favorite bands of the last 10 years or so, Go Hard or Go Home. I took that from their 2008 release, The Stoop. We'll hear something new from Little Jackie later on. Eddie Harris, with some humor, Eddie Atlantic. I took that from an album that I can't really announce over the air. That's why I'm talking... expletive deleted. Sending that one out to Joan Armatrading, who is a big fan of comedy. Yusef Lateef, Russell and Elliot. And that was preceded by, of course, our interview with Joan Armatrading. If you missed it, you can catch it linked on our Facebook page. That's Upfront Soul with Sanguine Fromage. Let's get back to the music now with something brand new. It is very rare that someone hands me a single and I find that I cannot stop playing it, nor can I stop dancing, but that's exactly what happened here. It's a supremely danceable track from Alan Stone called Upside. You heard it first on Upfront Soul.
Keeps turning me upside down. It keeps pulling me underground. Love is like gravity. It pulls me down equally and draws me back every time. This love is a heavy kind. That love is mine. To me, and I forget that the pain it caused. It's better to have loved and lost. This love has no alibi. Still, it feeds my appetite. It keeps turning me.
Keeps pulling me, 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 ke apologize for how I treated you. But nonetheless, I believe that this will be the death of me. The sunrise and nightfall, and back behind, behind it all. And I will wait, I will take my time. Patience is a friend of mine.
Been in love like this before. It's not the first time that I've been kissed, but I've never been kissed like this before. I can feel you close to me, and I finally found what I'm looking for. First time that you called my name, and you said I was the only one. How did I feel? Well, I felt so high that my head was poking out above the sky. Talking about you, baby, I can feel you close to me, and I finally found what I'm looking for. I can feel you close to me, and I finally found what I'm looking for. I can feel you close to me, and I finally found what I'm looking for. What I'm looking. For someone to be there to help me make it through the day. Now we meet at a time when we're both feeling really peaceful. We got something special, something that nothing and no one can take away. Never had a dream come true, never planned what I would do. Not like before when I was scared and going out of my mind that I'd be left for somebody else.
It's not the first time.
It's not the first time.
But this is the last time
that I've been in love.
Cause love ties us tightly.
Never
never known love like this.
It's here that we wanna be.
I can feel you close to me. And I finally found what I'm looking for. I can feel you close to me. And I finally found what I'm looking for. I can feel you close to me. And I finally found what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for.
Never had a dream come true till I had you
close to me. And I finally found what I'm looking for. I can feel you close to me.
We just heard a cut from Joan Armatrading's latest album, Starlight. It's a beautiful jazz-tinged album, and the track we heard was Close to Me. Again, if you tuned in late and happened to miss our interview with Joan Armatrading, you can check it out at our Facebook page, Up Front Soul with Sanguine Fromage. We also heard something new from Alan Stone, Upside. Didn't that get you moving? Alan Stone grew up singing in his father's church. His new album, Radius, is his first on a major label. You heard it on Upfront Soul. Stay tuned for more funk, soul, and jazz. We're gonna wrap up this hour with a little bit of Roberta Flack, Go Up Moses, from Quiet Fire.